Coming up on the Branding Deep Dive podcast.
And by the way, can we talk about the Branding Deep Dive effect a little bit? Are we allowed to do that?
What was that?
Dude, like, what is the branding we can go effect? Through all these episodes and like everyone made it big in some form or another after they've been on Branding Deep Dive.
Oh, really?
The Kyrie thing. So after Omar Elias came on Branding Deep Dive, Kyrie Irving made a donation to Pani.
Oh, yeah.
And that was like huge in like, it was all over like ESPN, Bleacher Report, all this stuff, right? And I was like, I messaged Omar, I was like, hey, man, like, you're welcome.
Nice.
But, and then if you remember Gerard, when he came on, so Gerard, like, I think it was a couple weeks ago where he posted, like, he was like resident of the month at like Henry Ford or whatever. And I like, in my story, I shared it in my story and I was like, Gerard wins resident of the month after he was on Branding Deep Dive. Coincidence? Didn't think so.
Yeah.
And then
there you go.
And then like talking about LaunchGood, right? This campaign that just happened with like Gigi Hadid and all these like other celebrities after Branding Deep Dive episode came out.
This is Abdul Manan and welcome to the Branding Deep Dive podcast. If you're new here, this is a podcast where we have in-depth discussions about what brands are doing well to drive customer loyalty and how you can take those principles and apply them to your own brand. Today, we are here to talk with the main host of the Branding Deep Dive podcast, Ahmed Shima, to review the 2021 season. In this episode, we dive into the key takeaways we had from each of our 2021 episodes and reflect on the lessons that we learned. Now, here's Ahmed Shima.
Can we start with the elephant in the room?
Yeah, what's the elephant in the room?
What do you mean? You don't know what the elephant in the room is?
The fact that I haven't been.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I had to come back for the wrap-up
so
that we have scheduled.
What's going on? What's your involvement? Are you a part of this or not? I think the audience is all wondering, like, is this Ahmed Shima's show? Yeah. Is this Ahmed Shima and Abdul Manan? Or, like, what's going on? Can we address that for the audience?
I would say this is definitely Ahmed Shima's show. I had to drop out about halfway through this season, 2021. Started my fourth year in med school, so got real busy with application season and stuff. But, you know, I've been listening, contributing back in, meaning like, you know, putting together the source material, getting some questions together about what questions we should be asking on some episodes and doing some graphic design as well. So that's where I'm at. And hopefully, you know, I actually was, you know, it's funny, I was thinking about it and I was thinking like, man, our episodes are pretty good. They're getting better and better. And I feel like I kind of want to jump back on this. So we'll see what 2022 holds. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to review this episode. We're reviewing our 2021 podcast episodes. We've got like 22, I think, and some shorts. So basically the way this is going to run, you know, if you've been listening to our podcast, we have key takeaways at the end of each episode. So we're going to run through those key takeaways. The deliverables that we've been able to pull out from each episode and see if we can remember what they're about and just reflect on them, you know, from our own perspectives, not from the perspective of the person we interviewed or the company that we interviewed. So
yeah, I really enjoy being on like this side because you're hosting and I feel so relaxed. Whereas like anytime I'm hosting, man, I have like my list of things that I want to cover. And then I'm on, like, I'm constantly, and for the audience that's not, like, aware, probably you guys won't be aware, so you're getting a little sneak peek here. So we interviewed Jordan Harbinger as part of, like, one of the episodes that's coming out in 2022. And one of the things he, like, in that episode, he coached me a lot on, like, how to actually be a better podcast host. And so now I've been, like, really conscious of a lot of the things and a lot of things that I do. And it's just like, oh, man, like, there's so many things as a host you got to be trying to like manage and kind of think through while you're trying to also make sure you're listening to the guest, which is not as easy as it sounds. But yeah, let's get into it. I just wanted to let the audience know how relaxed I feel right now.
All right. Starting with the first episode for the 2021 season, it was the amazing Gerard Huck talking to us about the Lakers and the branding of the Lakers, Los Angeles Lakers. And the main key takeaway we had from that was, one, attracting talented people starts with culture from the top down, and two, be the hero in your own story. I'll start by just asking you the question, what do those key takeaways mean to you back then, and what do they mean to you right now?
This episode was interesting. This is, if you guys notice our like podcast trajectory, like our first up until episode, it looks like episode number 18, 17 or 18, we were just doing our friends and people that we know. And Gerard was one of them. And I remember one of the funniest things about this episode was like, I wasn't expecting Gerard to actually do such a good job.
Oh yeah.
Remember, like, we had like pretty low expectations for Gerard. We're like, oh man.
Yeah.
So for some context, it's not that we don't think Gerard is knowledgeable or talented, but he's a resident, right? So at the time he was a medical school student. And so like, we were like, okay, we're going to have to do the heavy lifting in this episode, but he actually did a fantastic job. And to your question about the key takeaways, I think at the time, I don't know that my understanding's changed, but one thing that I will add some color on those is like, we're both involved with Falcon Notes, right? And one of the things that is surprising to me is that like, we actually have a team that I would consider like, sometimes I think like, dude, why are these people here? Right? Like, why do they choose to spend their free time working on with us? Right. And I feel extremely grateful and blessed that like, you know, these people are taking their time and they're believing in our vision. And what that reminds me of is how much of a responsibility that we have, right, as leaders of Falcon Notes to actually create that culture and make sure that we don't lose those people. Right. Like, they're trusting us, but now it's up to us to make sure that, we are looking out for their best interests and doing what's best for them and setting them up for success in whatever aspect it may be. And that's kind of what's been going through my mind. I remember in this episode, he talked about the bus family, right? Was it the bus family?
The general manager?
Yeah.
Her family, yeah.
Yeah, and kind of how they...
I can't remember the name.
Yeah, I think it was the bus family. But and how they kind of created this culture at the Lakers where players want to be, right? And so this is an episode that you were a part of too. So what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, now that you kind of jogged my memory a little bit with that, I remember it had to do with the organizational culture, not just the team leadership culture, like from, you know, head coach, main coach, assistant coach, stuff like that. I think it was more of a organization and general manager perspective and ownership perspective of the Lakers. So like, it goes way above the main aspect of the brand or the main aspect of the team. It's like the people that the buck stops at, so to speak, you know, the quote or the saying buck stops here type of thing,
right?
Like the top management, it starts all the way up there, not just like at the main attraction or what people see. It actually starts from behind the scenes. So I thought that was very interesting as well. So we're going to go ahead and skip some of our shorts and come back to them later, depending on time. But we'll go ahead with the next main episode that we had. It was branding an international nonprofit with University of Michigan alumni, Omar Elias, where we learned about the Hold Michigan on. Difference.
Why did you feel it was important to bring up a University of Michigan alum?
Because we talked about it in the episode. We talked about what the Michigan difference is. I forgot what it was, but it was something like, you know, you get like free support from like the university itself or something.
I thought it was, so I think you made that joke on the podcast and you were saying that, cause he was talking about, he felt this pressure to do something. Right.
And so, And
you're like, see, that's the Michigan difference. I was like, bro, why did you say that? Like, you need to chill out with your Michigan propaganda.
I'm not even from University of Michigan, by the way, but for the audience.
That's why it's worse.
Yeah, so this episode, this episode, we're talking about branding, so their branding worked. this episode didn't have any key takeaways, so we're going to have to wing this one. This was a two-part episode, and it was jam-packed with so many things, and I feel like that's one of the reasons we didn't have key takeaways. But what do you feel like, you know, reflecting on the episode now, was the key takeaway from from him.
What? Okay, that's interesting. We didn't have key takeaways. That caught me.
At least on the podcast description.
Oh, yeah.
I just got these from the podcast description, like the little explanations that we have.
Mm. I think we probably did that because I was trying to save time and I got lazy at the end. Right.
Yeah.
And it was super long as well. So that's probably why. But what I remember, I think some things that come to mind from this episode are just the importance of vetting the people you work with and making sure that you take time to really understand whether the person, especially like if you're working with offshore people that are not with you, like you take the time to do your research and vet out whether they're actually, their resume actually lines up with what they're able to do.
But one of the things that I remember right off the bat while you were mentioning is that Omar Ilyas, I remember he had this amazing idea where he had this blog for his company that he would use to provide value to his supporters. Hmm. So people wanted to help in certain ways. He couldn't find a way for them to directly help his project, but he basically said, well, you're interested in this idea of building wells. See if you can write our blog and provide content for us through that. And then we can hook you up with, you know, any references that you might need.
Right.
So I thought that was a very interesting approach, especially from a non-profit perspective. You don't have the finances to, you know, bring on a blogger or a writer or a copywriter or whatever. But he was like, hey, these people want to help. Let's see how we can help them. And he found a way to give them, you know, a job and also provide value from his company. And his blog is probably one of the coolest parts of his nonprofit because, you know, how many nonprofits have a blog? I don't know. But that was the one, that was where people, like, you know, posted about the LeBron James well, and the controversy around that. So I thought that was definitely very interesting.
That reminds me, like, if anyone that's listening wants to be a part of the Branding Deep Dive team, we can set up a similar situation where you guys can write a blog and not get paid for it.
Convert our episodes into written form.
Yeah. So I think what I remember is in this episode, one thing that was interesting is the discussion around like the temptation to take shortcuts when it comes to building your brand. If you remember, mm-hmm. like, one of the discussion points that came up was like how easy it is nowadays to kind of fake your way to a big following. And by the way, can we talk about the Branding Deep Dive effect a little bit? Are we allowed to do that?
What was that?
Dude, like, what is the Branding Deep Dive effect? Through all these episodes and like everyone made it big in some form or another after they'd been on Branding Deep Dive.
Oh, really?
The Kyrie thing. So after Omar Ilyas came on Branding Deep Dive, Kyrie Irving made a donation to Pani.
Oh yeah.
And that was like huge in like, it was all over like ESPN, Bleacher Report, all this stuff. Right. And I was like, I was his donor. I was like, hey man, like you're welcome.
Nice.
But, and then, if you remember Gerard, when he came on, so Gerard, like, I think it was a couple weeks ago where he posted, like, he was like resident of the month at like, Henry Ford or whatever. And I like did my story, I shared it in my story and I was like, Gerard wins resident of the month after he was on Branding Deep Dive. Coincidence? Didn't think so.
Yeah.
And then,
there you go.
And then like talking about LaunchGood, right? This campaign that just happened with like Gigi Hadid and all these like other celebrities after Branding Deep Dive episode BDD. Came out.
Dang, we're gonna follow this trend.
Yes,
capitalize on it. No, but yeah, you were talking about you know, taking no shortcuts. Can you elaborate on that real quick?
Oh yeah, so like nowadays, it's really easy to you know, fake your way to making it look like you have those signposts that come with actually building a brand, but that can never replace internally the feeling you get when you actually get, like, so for example, when they got the grant from Michigan, right? And they got that $25,000 check. And then now they're able to sign off, add to their website, hey, we're signed off by like University of Michigan president or whatever, right? Like those things, when they're real internally, it gives you a lot more confidence because now it's like, I worked for this and I'm getting a little bit of, you know, like people are starting to understand and support and that kind of thing. Whereas like, if you fake it, like, you know, you can buy followers, you can do all that stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, you faked it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And people can tell.
Yeah, well. Yeah.
But yeah.
I remember he was saying that gave him so much confidence in what he was doing.
Right.
So small wins like that, if they're authentic, they really help out in terms of the morale of the organization.
Exactly. Yep.
So the next episode we had was on the Audi RS6. Now, I'm not going to lie. This episode, I was kind of like, why are we doing this? You know, I feel like, you know, this is not a good story that we want. But one of the things that really made me change my opinion even before we started recording was this concept that you said. It was a key. I feel like this key takeaway you had written down before we interviewed Ahmed Nadeem. But the key takeaway is the story that matters the most is the story that your customers are willing to tell each other. Mm. Now, I didn't realize how important that was until we started doing the research into the RSX and talking about it with Ahmed Nadeem. And the other key takeaway is branding is about creating positive connections with your target audience. So
yeah, it looks like we
take it away with the first one.
Yeah, I was going to say, in the second one, it looks like we kind of mailed that in.
Yeah.
like the most basic key takeaway. But I think the first one is the one, yeah, that's kind of like what sparked the whole discussion. So for some background, I think we talked about it in the episode, but really like what happened is me and Ahmed Nadeem, we were watching the Hummer ad together and we were just talking about how much we disliked it. And he was like, hey, you want to see a really well done ad? Check this out. Right. And so he shared that ad with me organically. And then I was like, yeah, that is a good ad. Like, I was like, man, there's like no words in it. Yet now I kind of want this car, even though I find the shape of the car hideous. I don't actually like the car. Right. But like
a station wagon.
Yeah. I don't like station wagons. Right. Like that's not something that I'm into. But just the ad is like, it got me really excited about it. And it, you know, touches on a lot of different things that we can talk about. It talks about heritage and all this stuff, right? Like family, blah, blah, blah. But what was really interesting in doing the research for this was that every single person that's reviewing the car was saying the same thing. And mm-hmm. that was, this is like the best everyday driver you can get. Right. Mm-hmm. And it was like, what the heck is an everyday driver? Did Audi pay these people to say that? Right. Like, how are they getting every single person that's reviewing this car to say the same exact thing? Right.
Yeah. That's, and they were not related with Audi at all.
Exactly.
They're just like independent reviewers on YouTube or something.
Literally. Yeah. Just like independent people on YouTube. And they're all saying the same exact thing. And then like a lot of the other people, they're not like Audi fanatics, right? They're just like, they're car guys in general. And they're all saying the same thing. It was like, okay, how did they craft this narrative where everyone is saying the same thing? And that's kind of like, we should probably do like another deep dive on like how to actually create a campaign that does that, because we could definitely use that for like some of the things we're doing, right? Like,
yeah.
What do people say when they hear Branding Deep Dive and they're talking about Branding Deep Dive with other people, right? Like, what are people saying like about Falcon Notes when we're not there?
Yeah.
Right. Like, that's the kind of thing that like the people that are really good at branding and messaging and communicating, like they're able to work backwards and figure out how to communicate that and get that feeling across. And that's where the magic happens. But yeah, what are your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think like when I think about this episode in the context of the one I most recently listened to with LaunchGood, you know, LaunchGood is a story where the target audience was telling a different story.
Hold on.
Are you going to pause me?
Yeah, I just want to, for the audience that's listening on audio, I did want to mention that Abdul Manan is wearing a LaunchGood hoodie right now. And he's like, I feel like he's like sitting up higher just so we can see the LaunchGood logo. So I did want to mention that I see your LaunchGood shirt.
Thank you. No, because what it is, if I lean in, I'd have to kind of lift the camera up a little bit and then the light comes. So I'm just like going back a little bit.
Right.
But anyways, yes, one of the benefits is you can see the LaunchGood logo. But anyways, yeah. So what's interesting in LaunchGood's case is that the audience had a different story that they were telling than what the founders wanted to tell, and then they pivoted. And then it's interesting to, I would love to have some marketing people from Audi RS6's commercial or, you know, their marketing team to come in on the episode on Branding Deep Dive and discuss how it was that they were able to do this, if they are aware of it. And, you know, one, if they were aware of it, and two, how were they able to do it? Was it conscious, unconscious, and stuff like that? So that would definitely be a good follow-up.
That's a really good point because, I mean, Audi's been around for like, what, like a lot of, I don't want to say the exact number, but I think it's probably at least like 50, 60, maybe 100 years, right? And so yeah. Launchgood is a company that's like pretty recent. And you brought up that they pivoted and they shifted kind of their messaging after they realized that their audience wants something else from them. And so maybe it is something right. that stems from the audience. And, yeah, and you just have to listen to your audience and what they find about it and then, you know, double down on that.
And the next episode is one of my favorites, honestly. I don't know if it was two part. I think it was one part, but we went pretty long. Gymshark with our guest, Rafi Husseini.
Is one of your favorites?
But yeah, I really like this episode, particularly because I like the founder a lot. Yeah, it's not... It's not as much the guest as it was the company that we're looking into, Gymshark. Gymshark, you know, athleisure company that broke into a pretty saturated market. But we had two takeaways, and I added a third one now, but we'll talk about it. One was the focus on customer service. If you remember the story from Gymshark, I'll let you expound on that. And two was take feedback from the influencers you are working with.
Hmm. Yeah, just kind of expound on both of those. The first one, I'm sure there's numerous examples, but the example that Rafi shared was, I think they ran a Black Friday sale and within like an hour or something, the website crashed because they had so many orders. And so a lot of people wrote in complaining that, hey, we weren't able to order. And so he like hand wrote a bunch of notes to like everyone that wasn't able to order and gave them like a discount. And just like the lesson from that is like, you know, a CEO at that level, taking the time out to handwrite notes to like thousands of people, right? Like that really, that speaks more than any like social media post that you can get about, you know, customer service or anything like that. That's what customer service is all about. And then for the other thing, the influencers, early on, Ben Francis was working. I think Gymshark is really one of the companies that pioneered influencer marketing, right? Like they started yeah. with these people that were kind of big on YouTube at the time. Even like YouTube at the time is not really like a place where quote unquote influencers are. Like they're not getting paid out like they are today and stuff like that. And so there's some people yeah. posting bodybuilding videos and stuff like that they reached out, sent them some of their product. They'd be like, hey, check this out. What do you think? And then they gave some feedback and they made changes to their product because of that. And then as a result,
yeah,
you know, the lesson here for the audience is like, hey, if you're working with people that have distribution, right? Like when we're talking about distribution, we're talking about people that have an audience, right? If you're working with someone that has an audience, even if it's not someone with an audience, you should, this is a general principle, but like even more important, when you have someone with an audience, you need to make sure you're listening to them and applying their feedback to the product so that they feel more bought into the product. Right. And they feel yeah. like they had a part in creating this product. And then the way they push that will be 10 times more organic than if you just pay them to do it. Right. So,
yeah.
And you said it was one of your favorite episodes. And what was the third takeaway
yeah.
that you added on?
And the reason why it was one of my favorites is just reflecting on this third takeaway, which was if you know the story of Ben Francis, he actually left the CEO position to take on an inferior role position and gave the CEO position to someone else, right? And honestly, the reason why I was thinking about this was I started watching Silicon Valley. And if for those of you guys who've watched the TV show, the main character, I forget his name, is not a very likable character at all, but Pied Piper was, yeah, Richard. Pied Piper was his company. Richard was so desperately wanted to be the CEO of the company. And he was making some mistakes that, you know, ultimately he was a programmer. He was like a code writer. And he was not built out to be the leader that he needed to be for his company, Pied Piper. But he wouldn't let go of the role and give it to someone else. And I reflected on Ben Francis doing that. And I was like, wow, it's actually such a big thing that he was able to be self-aware in that context and be able to pass that role on in order for the company to keep growing at the pace that it was and at the pace that it needed to be. So I was like, there's a huge lesson in there. And if people can like bring their egos down a little bit as CEOs and if they need to, and then, you know, execute on that, like seeing like, hey, this guy's better at doing this than I am, right? Richard, the guy, he was like, he could barely give a pep talk to his team, right? But then the CEO needs to be able to do that. You know, he just wanted to go code. He just wanted to, you know, the compression algorithm, blah, blah, blah. And so they needed someone new. And so he wasn't able to deliver on that. So I think like, that is an important lesson that we see from the story of Gymshark. And I'm just blown away by Ben Francis' foresight to be able to do that and take on a different role where he's more valuable. So that's what makes this episode my favorite.
Yeah, and that's a really good lesson, the ego piece, right? Like being humble enough to know that this may not be your strength. And I think what's powerful in Ben Francis's case is that, like, he's a really young guy, right? And to be mm-hmm. humble when you're running a company and you've had success is, I think, it's easy for us to say sitting down here, but, like, literally he's built this company from the ground up. And if you watch Silicon right. Valley, like, that's how, you know, this is something, it's your baby. Right. And you feel like, mm-hmm. You know, you should be running it. You should be making all the decisions. Whereas sometimes yeah. maybe it's best that someone else that has experience scaling and all this other stuff comes in and helps you out. Right. And then the other thing from that is, like, he was able to focus on what he actually liked about the business. I think if I remember one of his interviews correctly, it was like he felt like not only that, like, he wasn't doing a good enough job, but that he didn't enjoy the job. Right. And then he enjoyed mm-hmm. doing the branding and, like, you know, marketing piece. And so he's like, let me focus on this, which is ultimately something what I want to do with Falconos is, like, hey, let me bring in some people that can do all the things that I don't like. And yeah. I'll just do what I yeah. like. Right. But yeah, yeah, it's a good takeaway there.
Singer Vehicle Design. I was there for this one with our guest, Yasser Mushtaq, repeat guest, where we talk about the brand company Singer and the resto mods that they do for Porsche 911s from a specific year. And I love these two takeaways. I don't know if you have them pulled up. Find your niche, 2, charge a premium. And I love it because it's short, sweet, and, like, that's all we got from these guys, because they definitely did what these two key takeaways are, which is they found a niche, very specific Porsche model, resto mod, and they charged a hell of a premium for their price, and they were able to stay alive as a company doing this. I don't know if there's much to add to this.
You know what? As I'm reading this, I realize the reason why they're so short is because in the actual writing, I want it to just be like a quick little blurb, and I don't want to expound too much. Whereas, like, in the episode, you actually kind of we go into
right, right, right.
So it's not that we're mailing it in, maybe part of it. But it's more of like, hey, we don't want to give away everything in this little piece.
That's true.
I think one thing that's not related, I think this was one of our best episodes in terms of teachable content, right? Like lessons and, like, really just mm-hmm. diving into, like, things that examples, stories that, like, it was a little bit repetitive, but I think it was, I remember Yasser after, as, like, kind of like an insult, he was like, hey, man, this was like that one Asian guy. I was like, you're talking about Chris Doe? And he's like, yeah. I was like, dude, that's not an insult. That's a compliment. Like, that's exactly what we're trying to do.
Yeah. What was he trying to say, though?
So I think Yasser is more of a fan of, like, the Joe Rogan type podcast, where it's just, like, super conversational. And, you know, like, of course, there are nuggets and stuff like that. But whereas, like, Chris Doe's is more like, always trying to bring it back to some lesson. Right. And that's kind of our purpose too. Like, we want to be an educational podcast, not an entertainment podcast. Of course we have to be, like, engaging, but I think there's a difference between engagement and entertainment, right? Like, I wouldn't consider myself an entertainer, but you mm-hmm. do have to have a certain level of skill to make sure that the audience, you're managing the energy and stuff like that, so it's not boring the whole time. Something we're still working on.
Yeah.
Way. Yeah. Let's go to the next one.
ALM, the first Muslim fraternity, Alif Lam Mim, also known as Alpha Lambda Mu. Here you had 3 guests on and no co-hosts, so this is definitely a challenge for you, probably. Shahir Ali, Hamad Fazlani, Bilal Ayub from, I guess they're from Dallas, Texas community. The takeaway 1, people join people, not organizations, which was an excellent takeaway, which I'll get into right now. But the other one was listen to your customers and see why they are joining you. Mm. There often is a disconnect between what the founders or marketing team thinks is the reality of why they're joining and what is actually the reason for people joining.
And this is crazy.
So what are your thoughts on those?
This is crazy because, like, we brought that up in the earlier when we were talking about LaunchGood and what was the other thing we're talking about?
Gymshark, Omar Elias, Audi
and LaunchGood, right? And so LaunchCode had this takeaway as well, but it was worded different. And where in LaunchCode's case, it was like, hey, your vision can change and all this, but it's really, it's the same thing. It's just like, hey, you start with a certain idea and it's not always what your audience wants or needs from you. And I think this has been one thing that's been like, if we're talking about 2021 in review, like super eye-opening for me is like, hey, we are stubborn people. We are people that have certain idea and a vision of what we want to do, right? Like I could tell you exactly where I would see Branding Deep Dive in 5 years, 10 years, what I want from it and all this stuff. But the reality is like, hey, the people that are listening may not want that from me, right? And it's important to listen to them, get that feedback. And of course, the people join people, not organizations. I think that's, you don't really need to expound much on that. That's pretty self-explanatory, but.
I mean, I think the craziest thing about this is that this is, you know, pre-TikTok, this organization. And it's just interesting to see the influence of culture, right? I feel like now more than ever, people don't trust big organizations and companies as much as they do people now, which is why this whole influencer thing is happening, where you trust people. You trust people that you know more so than companies that you don't know or faces that you don't know. And I think that is going to become a big trend moving forward with brands. You know, we were talking about, you know, just with Falcon Notes, it's like, well, Abdelmanan, look, we have a product MDM. You got to be the guy kind of providing that, you know, providing the value from that product. And why is that? Is because people will trust me more than they trust a faceless Instagram, you know, page, for example. So I think it's a very insightful key takeaway. And if you are thinking about starting a company, oftentimes we might be too shy or we might not have like the, you know, persona for being the people that, you know, people want to follow, but it's going to become very important for any company, any organization.
Yeah. Just to touch on that, I think in one of the upcoming episodes, we have a little bit of a discussion on like brand archetypes and humanizing, humanizing a brand, right? And all this comes from, right, the whole concept of brand archetypes. You know, a lot of times these are just buzzwords that a lot of people drop, but like really at the end of the day, what people are trying to do is create a more human experience for the brand so that when you associate with the brand, you feel like some kind of human connection, right? And always human connection trumps whatever like organization, but if you can make an organization feel
inorganic,
right? Like, so that's where kind of the brand archetype discussions come in. Check that out sometime in 22.
Next episode, web content management with Atik Waraich. Key takeaway here, take the time to invest in content creation and content management. And then the other one, there's a three-step formula to this process. One, understand analytics to see what the problems customers are facing. Two, build a solutions for that. And three, get feedback on those solutions to see if they're working or not. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So for the second one, it's the three-step formula was actually for creating a useful product or website, not for the content creation piece. So the first first one, what I'll just
kind of listen to the episode.
So the first one, for small businesses, I think a lot of times people may underestimate the power of creating content. In this episode, we kind of touch on SEO and ranking on Google, not too much, but what's really interesting is how much traffic the department energy.gov is getting just from like simple questions like, how long do I keep my turkey in the oven? Right? Like those are real questions people are asking. They're getting thousands upon thousands of hits for people coming to the website from that. And so really like you as a business, again, your key purpose is to provide some sort of value for your customers, right? And make their lives easier, make their lives better in some way. And you need to be able to communicate that and have content that serves them in that need, right? And super important. I think, you know, Gary Vee has his thesis, or one of the things he always says is like, every company nowadays is a media company if you want to compete.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's kind of like the idea there. The second thing, like I'll bring the example that he used. And it's really, you see this like at Walmart, Meijer, like at the end of your shopping experience. You have like, you know, you finish, you swipe the card, and then like on the screen, it'll pop up like, hey, did you find everything you were looking for? Yes, no. Boom. You hit yes or you hit no. And then like, you know, they take that feedback and they move on. Most people are willing to answer.
I don't think I've ever hit no.
I mean, have you ever had a time where?
Yeah, many times. By the time I get to the checkout, I'm like, screw it. I don't have time to like go back and look for it anymore. So it's like, why are you even asking me this question at this point? So, like, if there was someone who walked up to me in the aisle and said, hey, you know, did you find everything you're looking for? I'd be like, oh, no, actually, you know, I need to find this thing I haven't been able to find.
I think you're an anomaly here. But like, or maybe that's why like the store is not fixing their layout, is because they're getting false feedback from their customers that
yeah,
you know, they can find everything yeah. they need. But most people are willing to answer like one question, right? Like most, if it's like one yeah, question, yeah. but if it's like a 15-page long survey, people get kind of like turned off. Right. And that's why mm-hmm. a lot of companies have this to get feedback on like their management and stuff. Right. So to get feedback on your direct manager, they'll just ask like a one question every day. Right. And so most people are willing yeah. to answer that honestly and stuff like that. And so
yeah.
the lesson here was like, if you have a website, you have a product, you have a tool, create some form of feedback like that, where that you can get your customers feedback instantly. And it's not too much effort for them. If someone's had a yeah. bad experience, usually they're willing to go through no and explain what's wrong with it because they actually care enough to tell you no. If someone had a good yeah. experience, now you know, hey, they found what they're looking for. So the example yeah. I gave is like, look, if you created an article about whatever, at the bottom of the page, just add a little thing. Hey, did you answer the question? Did the question that you were searching for get answered? Or did you find what you were looking
yeah,
for?
Yeah.
Right? And that,
right. that like is like the frequently asked questions pages.
Right, exactly. And it's like, the reason why is because if you look at Google Analytics and a lot of these analytic tools that are out there, there's actually not a way to measure to see whether or not the customer got what they were looking for, right? You can mm-hmm. see how many times they came on your site. You can see the bounce rate. You can see if they left and all this stuff. But like, did they get what they're looking for? You don't know, right? Like there's not, yeah. a lot of times they're not making a purchase. They're just going to your site to see how long they should warm the turkey up for, right? And so yeah. That's just one thing that I found really pretty cool.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I guess I've always said no to those, even when I'm Googling something, like I have a problem with my MacBook, and Apple is notorious for this. They'll be like, you know, on their forums, they'll be like, did you find the answer you were looking for? And I would never fill it out because I guess I was like skeptical of whether or not they would use my feedback or not. But it was just, it's interesting. Same situation with Walmart where they asked me, did I find it what I was looking for? But I guess in that case, I thought they were going to give me directions to go find it. But now that I think about it, they just, I was like, I'm not going to go back. But now that I think about it, it makes more sense for them to just use it as a statistic. Right. But yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point, actually. Yeah.
You thought someone was going to come up and show you how to get to it?
But yeah. Anyways, all right. So chugging along here. I love this episode, too. You know, this was a really long one, Mechanic 1.
Yeah, this was when you were totally inconsiderate of Czar's time, and you just kept asking him questions.
We had so many. So for the audience, if you haven't listened to this episode, we started with insider information from one of his ex-employees, right? If that's not juicy enough for you already, it's like, well, what do you want? What do you want more from the podcast, right? But one of his ex-employees had some issues with the way that he was running his company. And so we had all these questions from this. We interviewed this ex-employee and we told Czar, we're like, hey, we're interviewing this ex-employee. Are you okay with answering questions that we might have from this interview that we have with this ex-employee? And he's like, yeah, sure. So I had a bunch of questions. I guess that's one of the reasons it went long. And, you know, he's comfortable answering the questions. So I thought we might as well milk the situation. But one of the key takeaways we had was you don't need permission from anyone to provide value to the world. Number two, don't be afraid to ask people for reviews. Mm. Number three, and I'm sure if you're listening to this podcast, Amachima has asked you to write a review for BDD.
Hey, so quick, I just want to mention one story. So there's this one guy, I asked him for a review, and I'm like 90% sure he doesn't listen to the podcast, so I'm not worried. But he was like, I'm not going to say his involvement because it might give away who it was. So I asked this guy for a review on the podcast, like, I think the date was like November 1st, right? And he's like, sure, just remind me tomorrow. I'm like, okay, fine. Like, if he wants me to remind me tomorrow, like, I'll remind him tomorrow. I remind him tomorrow. The guy just like leaves me on read. And so for every other day for almost 25 days, I reminded him And at one point, he's just like, what are you reminding me about again? And I was like, dude, can you interrupt me? And he's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, I got to. Finally, after 3 weeks of trying, I got him to write a review. And then the guy was like, hey, when I start my YouTube channel, can you, subscribe and comment and stuff and support? I was like, yeah, after you follow up for 3 weeks, I got you.
Nice. I was going to say, were you talking about me? But because it took me a while to write.
Oh, yeah, you were the worst. Like, this guy's the co-host of the freaking podcast. And I literally asked you, I don't know how many times I've asked you.
But I actually, so every time you asked, I actually tried to write a podcast, the review on Apple Podcasts. But yeah, obviously the interface sucks from your phone. So I wasn't able to do it. And then eventually I was able to do it. So I actually have an excuse. I legit tried every single time you asked.
So by the way, for the people that are listening, Apple Podcast reviews are super helpful, and I really appreciate everyone that leaves a review. For everyone that's already left one, thank you so much. And if you haven't, and you have an iPhone or you have a MacBook or whatever, and you enjoy and you get value out of this podcast, please do leave a review. It really helps the podcast out a lot. Also, for people that listen on Spotify, Spotify has just released the option to leave a review of the podcast. Not a review, it's just a rating. So there's actually you can't write written words or whatever, but just you can do the stars. So if you listen on Spotify, the condition is Spotify doesn't actually let you leave the review unless you actually have played an episode. So don't try to go in and scam Spotify. But if you listen on Spotify, would also appreciate a review on there. Thank you so much again. But yeah, let's get back into this one.
But yeah, Mechanic One, you don't need permission from anyone to provide value to the world. Don't be afraid to ask people for reviews. Number three, people are willing to pay for good services. And number four, effective advertising is about reaching your target audience where they are.
Yeah, so I think all four of those are great and we can dive into them. But I think for the sake of time, the one that what I was most surprised about, I'll say, was that number four piece. And what shocked me about that story is how much money he spends on direct mail advertising. Mm-hmm. Me, I'm coming from the digital era. I thought direct mail was dead. I legit, mm-hmm. I was for Falcon Notes, for example, I would never consider direct mail advertising. That wasn't even a thing that came up as hey, did we want to do direct? You know what I mean? We considered a lot of things. But direct mail was never one of them. It was you might as well ask me if I want to buy a billboard, right? Are you kidding? What am I going to do with a billboard? Yeah. Right? So it was surprising because it's just as effective as maybe if he spent more time on social media. But it may actually be arguably more effective for him because he knows exactly who he's targeting and he knows how mm-hmm. to speak to them. And at the end of the day, that's what matters in marketing, not the medium you use. But understanding, hey, I'm talking to Abdelmanan, and this is the way you need to speak to Abdelmanan if you want him to do business with you, right? And
so medium is effective in communicating with your audience?
Yeah, exactly. So Abdelmanan is someone that checks his email or whatever, right? So Abdelmanan, I might want to use email for him, right? Maybe Instagram he's not checking or whatever, right? So it's something to think through based on the business you're in. What about you? I think I already told you this, but I think out of all your performances hosting, I think this was your best one. And it was also your final up until this point, right?
Yeah. No, I enjoyed this episode a lot. I think the other thing, people are willing to pay for good service. What I loved about Zara was that everyone's experience with him for the most part was he's just so good at explaining what the heck is going on with my car, right? And the education component is very important, especially if you provide, a complex service that might not be something that your client is familiar with. You know, this is a drop-off service where they drop off their car, they expect it to be fixed and come back. Zara was able to tell them what was going on, what they did, and how it should improve their car. So I thought that piece was really good, especially if you provide a service that is a little bit more complex. So shout out to Zara for that.
Yeah, and it's also... he's in a space where most people don't bother doing that. Right. And that's what makes it.
Oh yeah.
It's a big differentiator from the service of other people because most mechanics you go to, they're not taking time to explain it to you because in my experience, you go in, you feel the mechanic feels he knows 10 times more than me. And he does in terms of cars, but there's no reason why I need to feel like that. right? And yeah, that's the exactly. thing about Czar is like he personalized the experience. So like you feel like, oh, okay, like I don't know what, anything he's saying, but like, yeah, it sounds good. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, yeah. He's explaining it to you. Yeah. All right. Next episode, Adam Sink, online presence.
Adam Sink.
Number one, be on all platforms. And number two, SEO strategy starts with figuring out what people are searching for to find your competitors. People are searching for answers to their problems. They're not searching for you specifically. I love that. Tell us more.
Yeah. So the first thing that I learned from this episode that I didn't already know, and I actually, Abdullah, we've had this discussion before, is like, I've always been like, hey, in terms of social media, let's only create a platform that we know we can commit to. Right. But one thing that Adam brought up is like, hey, even if you're not active on the platform, it's good to have presence on every single social media platform with the same like information, right? Like, for example, Branding Deep Dive, there's a podcast where you do XYZ and it links to your website. And so mm-hmm. what he mentioned is that like, essentially Google has like, you know, tons of ranking factors that they use to rank your website in search results. And mm-hmm. Like one of the heaviest ranking factors that there is your presence on these social media sites. So if you're on Facebook, Instagram, mm-hmm. Twitter, all with the same information, even if you're not heavily active on them, Google still gives more weight to your website's results and search because it shows them that you're a legit business, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what they're trying to figure out is like who's legit, who's not. And then they want to hear the results that are legit. And then the second one was, and this is a mistake that we made, right, with Falcon Notes, is that like people don't care what we do, right? Like people are not searching the web like, hey, what is Falcon Notes doing or what is Branding Deep Dive doing? They're looking for answers to their own problems, right? Yeah. And so when they come to your website, all the messaging, all the communication, the blog post and how you describe your services, all that stuff should be based on what people are searching, right?
Yeah.
What is a problem that you solve? Right?
That's a key insight. Totally. Yeah.
Right? Like so, no one cares that for example, right now if you go on Falconos website, it says It says like we design journals with purpose. Right? But like if I'm someone that doesn't know what Falcon Notes is or anything like that, I don't know Achima, I don't know the Manan, like I'm still confused. Like, what the heck is this? Right? Like and how do they solve any problem that I have? Right.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we are going to revamp in the next couple of days and you'll see it when it comes out.
But yeah.
Like what we're thinking through is really like, how do we communicate to the person that comes on the site, what we do that helps
them? Yeah. And optimizing SEO strategy based on that.
Yeah.
Because they're not searching a solution. They're searching a problem. So for example, if the goal was to have someone search and get the answer BDD, what is the question they're going to be asking? It'll be like podcasts on brand strategy and design. For small businesses or whatever, right? So that's how you want to be able to think when you're optimizing your SEO strategy. I thought that was like amazing. I was like, wow, that's a good way to start getting into your clients' heads and reverse engineering, so to speak. Next episode, board games with Meyer Huck. Key takeaway here, number one, think about how you can create an organic, memorable experience. Board game creators have reverse engineered how to give their customers unique, memorable, fun experiences every time they play. This is the recipe for word of mouth marketing. And number two, people buy into brands that they feel reflect their personality. I was not able to listen to this episode, so brief me on this.
Come on, man. So this episode was a fun one. This is essentially, to give you a little bit of context, Mahir had gotten his hands, like one of his friends created a new board game called Machinate. And so we got to talking. And originally we were just going to talk about Machinate, but then the more we talked, we're like, oh, we should actually do on like how board games kind of during the pandemic, we saw a big surge in board games again. Right. And so mm-hmm. what's behind that? What's, you know, going on here and all that stuff. And one of the key things, I did this episode while I was taking the brand strategy course with Prof G. Mm-hmm. And I know like you guys make the joke that I keep talking about like pre-purchase, purchase, post-purchase, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like, yeah, like I started using a lot of that terminology, right? But one thing that's interesting is that like a lot of brands that we see are historically, the process that has worked is you focus on pre-purchase, right? Like if I have a bottle of peanut butter, I design a nice label around it, and then I have a tagline, and then I add commercials on TV, and then people now want it, right? It's as simple as that, right? That's how you build your brand. Now, the problem is nowadays, that's not as effective anymore, right? Like who watches commercials anymore, right? Like most people have ad blocker on or like YouTube Premium. I mean, I don't even have like cable TV anymore, so I don't see like those ads, Netflix, all these other things that don't actually have ads, right? So ads is not as effective anymore, right? So a lot of these companies are switching their brand, the brand touch points that they focus on to build their brand to other aspects of the wheel, right? So instead of pre-purchase, now they're focused on purchase and then post-purchase. So as an example, right? Like I think it is, I think it's Hyundai. Hyundai, who has a 7-year warranty. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Hyundai, out of nowhere, they come up with this 7-year warranty, whereas cars traditionally come with like a 3-year warranty. Some brands may come with like a 5-year warranty. And these guys, now they're kind of like they're totally changing what all the other car manufacturers, like it's totally separate from everything else that the other car manufacturers are doing. They say, hey, let's do 7 years. And so now that is a post-purchase experience that they focused on so that it differentiates their brand and people talk about it, right? Like we're talking about in this podcast, for example. So now coming back to all, while we're talking about this in the board games, this, I kind of went into it a little bit deeper than I thought I was going to go into it, but really like, with board games, what's really interesting about board games is this is an experience where like pre-purchase and post-purchase are mixed, right? Yeah. And here's what I mean by that. Like Mahir brought up that like a lot of people are getting into board games through Twitch, right? So it's post-purchase for the people that are on Twitch that are playing it. But then it also serves as pre-purchase, like marketing, advertising, because people are now watching them play it, right? It's kind of like crazy cycle where they're getting the best of, they're getting a touch here in post-purchase, and they're getting a touch in pre-purchase, which is like absolutely amazing, right? And then the other thing that was a recurring theme on the podcast was like Mahir kept bringing up that like, hey, people buy this to flex, right? And so... it was like a recurring
buy that board game.
So like for example, he mentioned like people will have like collector edition board games or like certain Yu-Gi-Oh cards, and they'll leave them out in like display cases and stuff, so that like when people come over or whatever, like it starts a conversation, and it's like, hey, like I have this, right? It's like, oh, you have this, and it starts a conversation, right? And then we talked about this with Kimoa, right? I don't know if you can see that in the back, but I have like a Kimoa hat, which is Fernando Alonso's brand, whereas like. I wear that because I like inside of me, I kind of want people to ask me what this is. Right. And then I can talk about racing, Formula One and all this stuff, because it's a brand that most people don't see. Right. Most people aren't.
Right.
Like, unless you're actually into racing, which is even better. You'll have automatic connect. You know what I mean? And you're like, boom, you're already in racing. So those are kind of the main things that came out of that episode. I thought one of the things I mentioned is that like, I never thought that we'd be doing an episode on board games. In branding deep dive. But you know, there's branding lessons everywhere. If you're looking for it, you can find them. So
And I think that's one of the key takeaways of the whole podcast as well. I think introducing the average person to the concept of branding is very important, because then they're aware of it and they make decisions based on it. And so that, like, I think, you know, companies in general are moving towards making themselves excellent brands as possible. So to be aware of that is really helpful. From both entrepreneur perspective and a consumer perspective. Next episode was communication with Peter George. Key takeaway number one, start with understanding who you're speaking to and the result you want out of it. And key takeaway number two, public speaking is about what you take, what you can take away.
So let me put you on the spot here. Did you listen to this one?
No, I didn't listen to this one.
Okay. All right. So here, one of the analogies he used that was really powerful for the second key takeaway, which is public speaking is about what you can take away, not what you add, is like a sculptor, right? Like a sculptor starts with like a giant block of whatever it is, or like marble or whatever. And then they chip away until they have whatever their actual sculpture is right at the end. Right. But if you just leave the entire block there, right, it's just going to be a block, right? Like no one's going to get any, like, they're not going to pay millions of dollars for a block, right?
A block. Yeah.
And so with the lesson there is that a lot of times, and if you listen back to this episode, you'll notice this, we're just talking and I could probably remove 90% of what I'm saying and still get the essence of what it is that I was saying, which is, you know, like a fault of me, right? And I'm sorry that you had to sit through that, but
right, I'm like sorry that. As well.
but yeah, that's the point. Is like, look, you want to make your speech and your speaking concise, clear, and effective. It's not necessarily like one thing he said is like no one ever complained that the speaker didn't speak long enough, right? But they will complain when you go over, right? Yeah. So if you communicate what it is you're trying to communicate in fewer words, that's better than going over, right?
Yeah. Let me just connect it back. This relates to brand strategy and design from the perspective of like copywriting for your product service on your website or on whatever you were using to explain what you do.
Yeah. So in terms of branding, right, this episode was more about your personal brand and how it is to speak and present yourself. So in terms of like the brand aspect, that's more of what we were focused on. But yeah, that is a good point in terms of like marketing and really like effective communication is no different whether it's in marketing, in branding and copy, or it's in public speaking, right? All the lessons you take from this episode, you can apply to any of your marketing material.
Got it.
And then like starting with understanding who you're speaking to, that's like the same thing as understanding your target audience that we always talk about. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to spend any more time talking about that because I feel like our audience at this point already is probably sick and tired of hearing your target audience and study them. If you're not sick yet, by mid-2022, I'm sure you'll be sick.
MMA, mixed martial arts. We had our guest, Sifu Harun Raja, who runs a mixed martial arts academy. Key takeaway from his episode was actions speak louder than words. And number two, don't be afraid to ask for help. Walk us through those real quick.
Yeah, so this one I consider more of a general business best practices and like life lessons episode more than it was like a branding deep dive. Now there are definitely branding lessons in there and we can extract those. But one of the things that like from a branding standpoint is important to note here is that the power of trends, right? Like Martin Neubauer in his book, what's his book called? Zag, right? In his book,
the newest one. Yeah.
I don't know if it's the newest one, but like one of the things he mentions is like, look, it's a lot easier to find a parade and just get in front of it than it is to create your own parade. Right. And so one of the questions I asked Sifu Harun Raja was like, hey, Kung Fu Panda, John Wick, all these other movies that are coming out, how much of an effect do they have on your actual bottom line? Right. Like, are people actually coming in to your place as a result of watching these movies? Because I love martial arts movies. Like they're so awesome. Just the choreography. And then also like, they're also all about like respect and stuff. You know what I mean? Like it's also like honor and respect. It's just like, you can't help but love those people that are actually, you know, have the discipline and all that stuff. So, you know, he mentioned that, like, there's a guy that came literally, he was like, I want to be John Wick.
I remember that.
So like he was saying that it definitely does have a big impact in increasing interest and awareness. And people do come in strictly off of, you know, watching a movie and they get inspired and they'll come in. Right. And so that's one thing that's the lesson here is really, it's not a key takeaway that I put in there, but really like looking back at this episode from a branding standpoint, I would say is like, understand the trends that are going on and how you can be, how you can position yourself to kind of ride that wave, right? Like riding a wave will help you a lot more than just trying to create your own wave. Right. For example, we did an episode on Christopher Nolan. We did an episode on Intel versus Mac. those episodes on YouTube, because that like there was a period of time where they were trending those two topics. Also, like I think the figs, dude. So all right. So we did a clip on figs, and since the day we posted it, it has not. It'll every day it'll get like one or two views, and it's not like it's not like doing a crazy amount of views or anything like that, but it's consistent. It's like people are still searching figs, people, and it's there, right? It's a trend that you can just kind of hop on. And same thing with, so like Christopher Nolan, when we posted it, I think we got like 20 views, right? Like we don't push our YouTube, so we don't get too much views over there. But then all of a sudden in January, what happened is Christopher Nolan kind of lashed out on, I think it was on HBO for releasing movies at the same time as
Tenet.
Yeah, so like the theatrical release and the actual like streaming release, he was a big he didn't
theater
like
guy. He wanted people to watch it in theaters. Yeah.
Exactly. So there's like a bunch of articles that came out, and so he was in the news, and immediately on that we got like 80 views in like a day, right? And like if you go to our site, our YouTube page, that's one of our most viewed videos, and that's strictly because of a trend that happened, right? And so. I mean, that was kind of just like luck, right? We weren't expecting that to happen, but, right. Like it's finding these trends and doubling down and really creating content for those trends will help you in terms of discoverability, searchability, and people finding you. That's something we don't do a good enough job of because frankly, we do this like part time and we're trying to, just kind of learn as much as we can, not trying to get on trends, but yeah, it definitely, helps. And then, you know, the other like lessons here, I would say like really check the episode out. What I would say in this episode, another like branding thing from those key takeaways was, he had Sifu Raja has like, and in martial arts culture, like having mentors and teachers is like a big aspect, right? Like everything you do is from, you know, you consult your teachers and all this stuff. And so that was a big theme throughout that whole episode. And one of the things that we talked about, even in that figs short that we did, was right. Like, if you have people that are, you know, above you, you have people that
have oversight.
Exactly. If you have some people you can consult and they have your best interests in mind and they're able to kind of advise you and guide you, right? Like, you're able to avoid a lot of these mistakes and missteps and stuff that you, that may cause you a lot of problems in your brand. So, those are kind of my high level thoughts.
Yeah. There. So we had Amani, the founder of Not Your Basic Batch on Instagram. She runs a bakery company. This was a good episode. One of the key takeaways, free samples are super important. It goes with the saying, try before you buy. That's one thing that she found was very helpful for her brand. Key takeaway number two, understand and use quality cues. And I'll let you explain what those are. And number three, strict control of supply and demand. I added that third key takeaway, which I can elaborate on, but go ahead.
Yeah. So, the first one, free samples, I think is pretty, self-explanatory. And I think people in the food space generally understand this, right? Like Costco, you go in there, there's free samples all the time, right? Like people understand the value of free samples. But this is a lesson you can apply in any business you're in, right? Like doing giveaways, like Amani is big on giveaways. And the other thing that she does a lot of is, she'll add an extra pastry, even though you didn't order it, right? Like it's always about over-delivering and giving the customer something that they didn't expect. And that's something that like there's no substitute for that, right? Like if you can go above and make the customer feel like you gave them more value than what they paid for, there's no way that you're not going to do well in business, right? Like just
that's a good way to put it. That's essentially what you're doing with the giveaways. Yeah.
And then the second thing, so quality cues are ways to signal to your target audience that you have a quality product. And then you're able to charge a higher premium on price because people know that it's a quality product, right? So for example, right, like Apple, when we look at the products that Apple has, the packaging is nice, right? Like I have a Mac Mini here, like it's this silver, like it just feels nice. It looks nice. It's on my table. It looks nice. It has a little black Apple thing. If you touch it, I don't know what material this is, but it's like, you know what I mean? It like
titanium. Yeah.
So the outside is titanium, but the Apple is like a different material. So It's like little things like that, right? And so in her example, so you have to understand in your industry what the quality cues are. So like in the car industry, a quality cue may be just saying that this car was handcrafted. What's the like Ferraris or what was it called when you make everything by hand, right? Like that is a quality cue, right? And what if like the people that are making it by hand are not even talented? It may be better if it's like machine done. But like the point is like just adding that allows you to charge a significant premium automatically. Right. Yeah. Now, another quality cue in cars is like the trim of like the seats, right? Or like the trim of the actual, like if you have
dashboard or
like carbon fiber in panels, there and stuff like that, right? All that stuff, right? Those are quality cues. The speakers, right? Like if it has like a like Bang & Olufsen speakers, right? Like those are going to be a higher end, like it's a quality cue, right? And so in the food space, the quality cues that she uses or that I kind of noticed that she uses are, right, like she has nice packaging that's branded, right? And then in the food space, it's really the ingredients you use, right? Like she is very particular about the ingredients she uses and make sure she uses the best quality products in her product. And then how they look at the end, right? Like the pastries look good, right? And then on Instagram, what she does is making sure that the pictures and videos are high quality. Right. And she shows the whole process. And those are quality cues there too, right? Like if you go to an Instagram page and the pictures aren't good and the food doesn't look appetizing, then in your mind, you're signaling to your customers that, hey, this is probably not that good. It's not worth a lot of money. Right.
I laughed so hard when you brought that up in the episode. You're like, well, if the food doesn't look good, you're not going to want to buy it. And it's funny because, you know, we talk about like food porn, like visual communication in the food industry is very important. That's a very important quality cue. So I was just like, wow, yeah, that's true. And then she reflected on it too, because one of the advices that she got was like, oh, you got to keep producing content. But then she understood her quality cue so well that she was like, well, no, it might work for just, you know, something else. But my product is a food product. Quality is very important in this case. And she realized that lower quantity, but consistency was more important than keep producing in terms of quantity. So I thought that was a pretty deep take too.
Yeah, there's so on her business in general, like another thing that she's kind of that we didn't really touch on in the episode as much, but like one thing that I admire about it is like she has customers that are local, right? That she's able to kind of engage on Instagram, right? And like as soon as like Instagram is up and running, boom, like, you know, she has another drop this week. And then like, oh, yeah. So actually, you're going to talk about it in your thing. And the supply and demand. So why don't you touch on your takeaway there, and then we'll get into
that. Yeah. I mean, well, one thing I thought was so fascinating was that she has a strict control over her supply and demand, meaning that she knows her capacity of producing what she provides and creates a demand through that by limiting the supply. So she's a one-man team from what I understood from the episode. She makes her own, you know, very well-crafted bakery items and then builds a demand around it. And then there's like an exclusivity element to what she provides just because of her limitation. And it actually works a lot in her favor. She talked about when she started a pop-up shop wherever it was supposed to be a 3-hour long event, you know, in 1 hour she was sold out and then people were upset, but then they just created more demand and then it allowed for more, you know, delivery the next time around. So I thought that was very fascinating, especially when we look at some of the episodes that we talked about in the past. Figs does this really well. They have a very low supply and that allows them to create demand. So I was just reflecting on the similarities there. I was like, wow, this is a good power. This is a good, powerful point.
Yeah, I think a lot of, I mean, you see like Supreme and stuff, they do it artificially, right? Like people like artificially will constrict supply so that demand goes up. But in this case, what is the real genius in this strategy is that you're not wasting your materials.
My favorite thing about that episode was when she was like, yeah, I would get views and engagements with pictures of food, but then when I started showing myself biting into the food and eating the food, like views and engagement spiked up. I was like, wow, that's crazy.
So the thing that surprised me most about that episode is how she said, like, literally when she posts reels, she'll get 3 times the sales or something like that, right? Like, and I was like, the more I think about it, the more I realize that, like, if you're in the B2B space, then posting on Instagram and social media is more about social proof, right? Like, mm-hmm. hey, I know how to do this or whatever. But if you're in the product consumer space, then mm-hmm. like there's a direct correlation between how much you post and how the quality of your posts and the amount of sales you have, right? So mm-hmm. if you're direct to consumer, you need to be on these platforms. You need to be posting your stuff and doing all you can to push on these. But if you're in like a B2B mm-hmm. space, then it's not so much about, you're not going to get clients for your brand strategy company. Like for example, for us, like by posting clips of Branding Deep Dive, we're not going to get branding strategy clients. But what it will do is show, if someone looks us up, they could be like, oh, okay, they have all these clips talking to these people and, you know, they must know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
clever proof, yeah. B2B for the people that are listening is business to business.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. But yeah, all right. Last episode, Launch Good with Chris Blauvelt. We had so many good takeaways in this short episode. It was a fantastic episode. Number one, the founder nuance. You know, founders and entrepreneurs tend to be stubborn, but it's important for them to be able to pivot. Number two, relentlessly resourceful. This was something that Paul Graham realized in his Y Combinator experience, is that entrepreneurs that are the most successful are relentlessly resourceful. Number three, I added a couple things. Believe in what you do, and you'll never be sorry about pitching. And then number four, is your idea a billion-dollar idea? I remember someone asked Chris Blauvelt that about LaunchGood, and he was like kind of hesitant, and I thought it was very important. Lesson there. And number five, how to make people love to pay, to donate. And the answer that he gave was beautiful. He said that, you know, paying is a way of showing, is putting your money where your mouth is, right? So it's a, you can say all you want. Oh, yeah, I believe in this. I think this is important. But paying is a way you can believe, you can show people that. And I thought that was an amazing framing of donations or charity in general. It's like, oh, you believe in this? Well, pay up. And that's how LaunchGood kind of, I mean, they don't use that specific target, but I remember him briefly saying it where he was like, well, you know, pain is how you show what is really important to you. So I thought that was an interesting key takeaway.
In those key takeaways, for me, what I found most interesting, and I, like the founder nuance is something I labeled, I don't know if that's actually what it's called or whatever, is that like, look, when it comes to external forces, when it comes to people that are outside looking in, you need to make sure that you are strong in your vision and you're not willing to waver at all. You have to be stubborn to that. But then when it comes to your customers, you need to be willing to change over and over again until you get what it is that they actually want and need from you. And the example of this was, you know, when they started out, they started out as more like a Kickstarter for like creative ideas and stuff like that. But they found that the community is not actually... that's not what they actually want and need from LaunchGood. What they want and need is a way to fund charity projects, right? Like relief and stuff like that. It's funny, like the way Chris talked about it, he's like, when we started out, like, you know, people would come and ask if they could put their charity on. They're like, yeah, sure, go ahead. You know, he was like, yeah,
they're,
like, you know.
They're like a side project, yeah. They're like, hey, I'm the man, don't worry about this, whatever. You know, it shouldn't be too hard to run this.
Right. And so the other thing, one of the main awesome things from this one was like, you were one of those people that were, you were a LaunchGood fellow, right? And so one of the things we talked about was like, how he had people assigned to actually walk through and give a personalized experience to the campaign creators and how that was one of the ways that they differentiated themselves from their competition. One of the things he talked about is like, there's always room for personalization, right? And so if you're in a space where you're trying to figure out how to differentiate yourselves, and I think we can, again, bring it back to Falcon Notes, right? Like one of, like for us, like, at least for me, it was like, how do I answer the question, how is Falcon Notes different? I was like, dude, I don't know, right?
Yeah.
And so what we did is that it differentiate ourselves with that personalization. It's like, hey, we literally do custom journals for people, like from start to finish, right? And so that's kind of, there's always space, whatever space you're in, personalized experience, personalized service, always room for that.
To wrap up this episode, I want to get your take on how you think the podcast has grown from our first episode on the Ford Bronco to our most latest episode with LaunchGood. And I'll give you a little bit of thoughts on mine, especially from the perspective of having stepped away from the podcast a little bit and going back to it and having to listen to some episodes.
Yeah, I'm interested to hear your perspective, but since you asked the question, I'll go first. One of the things that I will advise all people that are trying to create content in some way or create something is like, again, this is a lesson from Chris's episode and some of the other episodes, is like, you get more clarity as you go, right? Like as you go, it becomes clearer and clearer what it is that you should be doing and what gap you have, how you can serve your customers. When we started our podcast, like we were our intro from when we started the podcast to right now is completely different, right? Like now it's a lot more clear and like, hey, when you're listening to this podcast, this is what you're listening to, right? And we communicate it differently and it'll change again probably in the next couple of weeks and stuff like that. But one of the things that is really, I found is that like now I know what gap I'm trying to go for. And after kind of taking a lot of these kind of courses and stuff as well, is like, I know in the branding space, what space I want Branding Deep Dive to occupy. And I don't think I would have ever gotten there had we not started creating all this content. And then in terms of like actual show stuff, right? Like actual, I think as a host, I would say reflecting back, I think I got better. And then also, like one thing that I'll credit Ruffy for is like up until episode 16, like I said, all we did was people we knew. And I was of this opinion that, hey, I'm not going to reach out to people until I feel like I have a good enough product so that when they come on, they're not just wasting their time. Right.
Yeah.
And that was my whole thing, is like, hey, our podcast is not good enough. And I knew we'll get there eventually. But then, as a joke, like Ruffy's like, hey, you want to get Chris on? And like me and you had been talking about getting Chris. It was one of the first names we talked about because of you know, we want to talk about LaunchKit. But we knew we're not ready to have Chris on yet. We knew we're at this stage, it's not going to be a good enough episode. Right. And so Ruffy, as a joke, he's like, hey, you want me to reach out? I can reach out. I was like, fine, go ahead, man. And so he did. And I was thinking, Chris is not going to accept. So whatever, like, you know.
And by the way, Amachima still doesn't have Chris Blavel's number, so he's been asking me to communicate. that's how much of a gap there is between Amachima. Like, you know, when he says people you don't know, Amachima does not know Chris Blavel.
No, like we see each other, like we're in the same community. Yeah. I just the conversation has never come up to like ask his
answers ever, right?
So, just to clarify that.
I just thought it was funny when you're like, hey, I don't have a number, can you send these links to her? I was like, bro, you did a whole episode.
Yeah. But so Chris accepts to my surprise. And then I'm like, oh, shoot, now I got to actually take this seriously. And then from that point, I was like, okay, if Chris accepted, that means other people may be willing to accept as well. And so what this year has been a constant state of kind of getting out of my shell and pushing myself to do bigger and bigger, prepping harder and harder. I think there are a couple episodes here and there that I think I winged it and I didn't do a good enough job, but I think I'm going to post anyway just because you know, I had guests on, and I'm sorry for the audience that doesn't get as much value out of those and feels like it's a waste of time. But I do think it's good to document the journey. I know some people would just kind of trash the episode, but I think it's a good way to document it and look back. So yeah, I would say those are the main things, really in terms of the, again, to recap, right. How I feel the podcast has grown, this year. Of course, the listeners and all the numbers and all that stuff has been good as well. Been learning a lot in that process. One thing I learned is how hard it is to actually book people and how hard it is to actually grow a podcast. It's easy to make a podcast. It's not easy to grow a podcast, right? Yeah. Like that's one thing that you find out very quickly. And I think that's one thing that why you see a lot of people start podcasts and they drop off is because no one actually listens to podcasts like they think they do, right? Like people listen to Joe Rogan. And people think that all those people that listen to Joe Rogan are going to start listening to you. It's not going to happen.
No way.
Sorry to break it to you.
Absolutely not.
Right. And so
if you're thinking of starting a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. If you're thinking of starting a podcast, you're going to have like 3 downloads. You'll have
your mom.
You have your initial.
That was remember, that was a running joke at the beginning to our 3 listeners. It was like me, you, and Ruffy.
You will have that initial spike. And I've seen that in like, you know, when you start a project, you have that initial spike, people are like, oh, cool, you're starting something new. But then most people will not stick around till episode 28, right? You'll get 4, 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 people that are listening consistently, right? And then every once in a while, when you get a bigger guest, you'll get a little spike. But unless you're running ads and doing active outreach, you're not going to grow your podcast like you think you're going to. You're not going to just make it big out of nowhere. Unless, I mean, of course, there's examples of people kind of getting lucky if you find the right trend and stuff like that. But really, if you're just talking about random stuff, like, good luck.
One thing I would say, listening to you at the beginning of this episode, but also listening to you on the latest episode with LaunchGood, is that you have definitely improved your hosting skills. So that was cool to see. And the other thing I really think is what's interesting is that we have been able to deliver better and better value to our listeners. I think we're able to pull the value out of our guests. If we thought that we were doing a good job before, we're definitely doing a better job now. And the way I think about it, the reason why I was thinking about this was, like, literally on my interviews with residency programs, I have podcasts as my hobby, and, you know, they ask about hobbies, they ask about podcasts, and some of the people, like I said, have been some of the doctors, like people like not related to, you know, they, you know, branding and strategy design, this is not what they think about. They're listening to the podcast. They're like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And I was like, do you feel like it's helpful to you? They're like, oh, not really. Like, I don't really have something I want to work on the brand for and stuff like that. But then I would come across people that were like, oh yeah, you know, these were episodes, early episodes were good. And I would be like kind of shy from like telling them to listen to specific episodes. But then as I started listening to the later ones, I was like, oh, dude, these are amazing. Like, I kind of, like I told you, I was like, man, I'm excited for 2022 to see if, you know, I have a little bit more time to be able to contribute to this. And one of the inspirations for telling you that was that I was like, wow, some of these episodes are really, really good. So I think that's the main thing I took away.
So to add to that, I think the reason why they've been getting better, against like there's the reps piece, but in terms of like finding those like gems, is because we're actually working on something ourselves. You know what I mean? Like, we're actually going through a lot of these problems ourselves. And then, of course, both me and you have been in situations where we're advising clients and, you know, nonprofit organizations and small businesses and stuff like that. But that's like, we're a little bit disconnected from that, right? And then what the lens we kind of bring in, I feel, to a lot of these conversations is like, hey, we're trying to learn, because like with Chris's episode, is directly a lot of these questions are like, hey, how do I actually do this for myself? Right. And I'm trying to figure that out. And so I think that helps a lot, and really bring that beginner's mindset. If you're a podcast that's trying to be educational, you have to bring that like beginner's mindset and make sure that you're trying to learn from every person that you are talking to. And what really helps in that space is not only listening and, you know, trying that, but like if you're also trying to implement a lot of this stuff outside of it, it helps you, right? And you have stories you can tell.
I think for me, one thing that I've noticed, and you know, I say this when I pitch the podcast to people who ask what it's about, and I give the example, I say we're branding deep dive, we look at brand strategy design from companies, but we don't look at big companies. We don't look at Nike and Apple, we look at small companies. That's part of my pitch for the podcast. And one thing I realized is that we do look at small companies and growing companies that have, you know, that are in a very infantile stage of their growth. And I think the lesson that we hear time and again, if you listen to these episodes, is that concept of, you know, doing non-expandable things. You know, we understand that, and we understand the value of it from hearing all the different examples. But I think if you are a listener who has a product that they're trying to start a business around, like myself and Ahmachima included with Falcon Notes, it becomes a reality where you start having to do those small things that are not scalable, and they require a lot of effort, time, and energy that don't have the results or return that you might expect, but they're almost critical for your growth. And you hear this in every single episode, everywhere from Gymshark to LaunchGood to Bakery to, you know, every single episode, I feel like is we touch on it, where like there's certain things that you have to do that to develop that trust, and they're not really scalable, that eventually will become, you have to find a way to become scalable, but you need that first step of doing things that aren't scalable. So it's a great thing to hear over and over again. And also, if you are starting a business, start to consider how you're going to implement it. So yeah, that's my big takeaway from 2021. I'm excited to see what we have in store for 2022. And that wraps up this podcast, I guess. If you enjoyed this discussion, please consider leaving a review and sharing with a friend. We've got lots of cool stuff planned for 2022, so stick around and we'll see you next week.